Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, thank you for joining us for another show today. This is episode 159. Drake is not here today. Kevin and I are going to break into some of the issues that are going around with the Iowa football team right now. Some citizenship problems, some football problems. We're going to talk about that dynamic. Let's have a day. Let's go. Okay, welcome in to the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast, the most wish-wash, piece-together podcast that you guys are ever going to hear. It's just me and Kevin. Drake is getting smashed at the poker tables currently, is what he said. And we already tried to do this twice. First of all, my recording equipment that I brought down, I was so excited. I was like, oh, I can record the podcast. I could not figure out like the electrical interference. And so like I was getting all of this static static noise in the back of my headset. So then we switched to not using that. Then the internet was giving us trouble. So now we're doing this off of our cell phones. We apologize for the audio quality. It'll probably never be this bad again. Welcome in. As we said before, when we tried to do this, people, you're going to be sad with this podcast. You're sad with the Hawkeyes. Kevin, you're wearing an Iowa t-shirt. I assume that's an Iowa football t-shirt.
That's my bad. I wasn't supposed to be doing that.
Yeah, well, you know, the fans would probably appreciate no t-shirt and just showing that chest off. Which, how about that picture of Pat Fitzgerald, first of all, that the fan made us?
Whoever made that was pretty freaking funny. I think I said in the group chat that is extremely mean and extremely hilarious.
Just so disrespectful. They asked not to be named because they actually, I think they don't want to lose their job or like be associated with the slander. But we 100% want the slander. We want to be associated with all of it. So, Fat Tits Gerald and the Northwestern Wild Kitties roll into Iowa City, and they get the job done for the fourth time in 5 years against the Hawks. Have you been on Twitter much, Kev, after this game?
I scrolled through the main feed. I didn't dare go tap on any big reporters' tweets or any of the tweets from the football account. Into the depths of Twitter. I imagine you did, though. I imagine it wasn't pretty.
Let me tell you, it's a
sky's falling.
The sky's falling. We're full on fire Ferentz, fire Brian, fire Petrus, bench him. Get Deuce Hogan in starting position. I don't even know who our second string is. I think our second string is
Padilla, right?
Alex Padilla, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we start there with Spencer because, again, you know, I've been on the Spencer Petras train of wanting him to do well. I want him to be great, and
who doesn't want him to do great? Yeah, everyone wants him to succeed.
Right. Everybody wants to see him succeed. Right. I think the first thing we preface this with is, not even so much, you know, going through the craziness of Iowa Twitter. A lot of times you see tweets that are very ignorant to the fact that kids are always trying their best. And I don't think, and it's good. The criticism hasn't been of Petras that, you know, he's not trying. The criticism is that he's trying too hard. He has to lay off of the juice. I said in the instant reaction podcast that I put up for the Patreon subscribers yesterday that somebody needs to give the kid a Xanax so that he can just come down a little bit. What are your thoughts on the Twitter people want Petras benched, and they want to see what our other options are, what we have in second, third string, knowing that Petras didn't get a spring ball. He didn't really get a whole lot of a summer where a lot of really important skills and drills work happens, and we can dive into what that actually is and why that's important. They didn't get a real camp. They didn't know if there was going to be a season or not. What is the expectation, and how long do you let a guy sit there? Because for me, I'll be real honest. I think it's and we've been on the inside, right? We know that the coaches see these guys every day. They see Alex Padilla. They know what Deuce Hogan's capable of. They're putting the best guy out on the field. And I think it's hard for the fans to sometimes put that in perspective. It's foolish to think that Hogan or Padilla is going to do any better, right? In this situation, like, they also haven't had the best offseason. Hogan just came into the program from high school. I think that sometimes the fans see these other teams, you know, with the high star quarterback recruits, and they think, well, sometimes they just throw that guy in right away as a freshman, and they're great. Like, why can't we do that? From your perspective, Kev, how do you go about this quarterback situation? Because obviously Petras hasn't played great. What do you think about that?
I mean, no, he hasn't played extremely well. He hasn't played horrible either. Okay.
Right.
So, like you said, it's a crazy, crazy off season, and, you know, being thrown right into the thick of a Big Ten schedule. That's, mm-hmm. That's not an easy thing to just walk into. I don't know, because I've never seen Alex Padilla touch a football, throw a football. I don't know what the situation is behind him. But like you said, like, the coaches, they see this guy every day. You know, we've only heard good things about him. And, you know, he's got a good attitude. So it hurts. It, you know, obviously Iowa fans want to see him do better. He's got some receivers to get the ball to. But, yeah, I really don't have a great answer for you. I really don't.
And I got a lot of
– What I would just – you know, he hasn't been put in some of the best situations either.
And we're going to get to that in a second, because, I mean, first off the bat, Iowa ran the ball 19 times.
18 by my count. But yeah.
18 times yesterday. We threw the ball 50 times. I mean, we're not even talking about a 1-to-1 ratio or like a 3-to-2 ratio. We're talking about a 5-to-2 ratio of passes to run plays. You'd have to go back in the stat books. I don't know if there's ever been that ratio of pass to run plays in the Kirk Ferentz era. D- I really don't.
I'm sure there has in games that, you know, we were chasing a million points. Or, sure. You know, he talks about, you know, some like the 04 team or something like that where they had like no running backs on the roster. They all got
Sam Brownlee.
Threw the ball. Yeah, exactly. You know, and I kind of get what we're trying to do because we do have some weapons on the outside mm-hmm. to get the ball to. But at the same time, we got a pretty good weapon in the backfield and the running game looked pretty good last week. And we started off the game 17-0. And, you know, I would have liked to see us try to establish the run a little bit more. I just don't have anything else to say about that. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah. For those listening who aren't, don't understand basic game management when it comes to football, generally a team like Iowa, who is known and kind of, at least in the history books, kind of built themselves as a run first team. You know, the O-line starts everything. You're physical up front. We run the ball, point of attack. We establish the run. And in years where, you know, we only have one receiver who's a real threat, we open that guy up by play action and establishing that run game first. You don't see Iowa with those kind of passing numbers unless we're in a game where we fall behind. And passing is usually the way because it doesn't chew up as much clock and you can gain a lot more yards, though it's a little bit riskier. That's how you play from behind. And so none of it makes sense in the game we had yesterday where you could not have been gifted a better first 10 minutes of the ball game. I mean, just like Christmas came early. Josie Jewell's birthday is here. Josie Jewell was born on Christmas for those listening. And,
you just like through no, you know, thing that you did correctly, but you have the ball on the 6 yard line with a minute and a half into the game.
Incredible. And then it brings up a good point. We run one play.
Yeah. Good for us. We capitalize, score a touchdown.
And Petras, to Petras's credit, because I'm sure he woke up and saw some of this and it's just getting absolutely pounded. He threw an absolute perfect fade to Brandon Smith. Perfect play. You couldn't throw a better ball.
Perfect ball, perfect catch, touchdown. Hawks up 7-0. Awesome.
Yeah, six second drive, one play. You know, we get the Ramsey fumbles on a option keep up the middle. Goodson runs in a touchdown. Everything's good in paradise. And, you know, you can't really say that we established anything on those two drives because they weren't drives. You know, we were gifted. And after that, we basically didn't have an offense for the rest of the game. And,
You know, they had one good drive. You know, they had a couple good drives, you know, late first quarter and the second sure. quarter that both resulted in field goals. But after that, I mean, you know, there just really didn't seem to be a whole lot of, you know, continuity to the offense. Like, never really got in a groove, you know what I mean?
The consistency wasn't there and not scoring in the second half. It's just, you can't do that. And it comes back to, you read it from all the reporters, you know, it doesn't matter who, Lystico, Emmert, David Eicholt, anybody who's reporting on the Iowa Hawkeyes, they're all writing about the same thing. And it's that Iowa doesn't have an identity on offense. Usually that identity is 60-40 run to pass, open up the play action, burn the clock. That's Iowa's identity. And
you credit Brian and the rest of the offensive staff for trying to, you know, branch out this year because you really should tailor your game plan around the talent that you have in different positions.
And I think that's a point that fans are skipping over. They're going all the way from, you know, when we're running the ball and getting stuffed too much, we're like, why don't we pass more? Oh, now yeah, they're all, I mean, like,
grass is always greener on the other side. Now, and I'm not saying that we have to line up in a pro formation and run a fullback lead every first down. But, you know, I don't care how we run the ball. I don't care if we run it out of the spread. I don't care if, you know, a bubble screen is basically a run. But establishing consistent plays where you can get 4, 5, 6 yards, keep the clock running, maintain possession of the ball, you know, that's just as effective as being able to be like a big physical two back team that runs the ball for 4 yards of play. I don't care how you get those 4 yards and stay in bounds. Doing that, controlling the clock, long drives that result in points and playing good defense is how you win football games.
100%. 100%.
So, I mean, I like us trying to start it out this year because we do have some talented guys we got to get on the field. But let's not neglect what, you know, that the fact that we have to play ball control.
And I don't question, I think you, me, Drake, you know, Brian Ferentz is Drake's guy, and everybody on the podcast knows that. And I think even Drake in this situation, and we rarely do this, because we know that the coaches know best. They're the fucking coaches for a reason. But this one was so drastically shifted to the passing game in such a situation where it was almost like, if you're going to run the ball, this was the game. Like, you know, early on.
You know, we had a lot of success with the run game last week too, which was a little surprising.
Right. It's like, hey, it worked. Let's do it works. Mm-hmm. I would love to ask Brian, like, hey, what are we doing? Respectfully. And I, in my mind, and I don't think, you know, Brian's a Division I football coach. I don't think he would get sucked into this, but are we knowing we have all these freaking receivers, are we trying to do to, is Brian thinking like, I have to get all these guys touches. Like, I have to use these weapons, and it went too far. Is that what
are we trying to do too much? Basically, yeah, that's a question. I don't know. You know, I imagine his game plan going into today was, you know, we have the advantage on the outside on the perimeter. Let's try to get all the guys on the perimeter. You know, it's not all on Brian too. You know.
No,
we have to, you know, the players have to execute too. You know, 26 for 50 on passing is not, I mean, that's not going to win games. You know, averaging 4.3 yards per attempt is horrible.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, so,
and a lot, you know, of that,
some of that's on, some of that's on Petras, some of that's on the receiving core, and some of that's on, you know, Northwestern played a good game defensively.
Yeah. Too. You're not gonna go 100% even if you're doing everything right. You know, and it brings it back to Petras, the conversation, and really I know the biggest complaint with Petras so far is he looks confident. He's got the body. He's got the arm strength. He can throw any ball. It seems like he knows the plays. He has to bring a little off of it. He is absolutely, I mean, you can see it.
Yeah. And for those 5 to 10 yard throws, especially the ones over the middle.
Which it resulted just, in picks late in the game because our receivers, they can't quite grip it and pull it in, and it tips off our receivers.
You know, they're a little off target too. Like a bullet at your belly, you should be able to catch. Okay. A bullet that's, you know, the announcer kept saying high and outside. I don't really like Dan Orlovsky, but whatever, he was right. It was high and outside. I'm not a big fan. I think he's not. Anyway, you know, wow, you go like get some hands on it, and where's it go? It tips right up. So, you know, that resulted in like 3 picks just like that. So,
yeah.
Or, no, 2 picks were like that. One was just a damn throw.
Good read by the safety.
But yeah, I mean, you know, the one at the not the last drive, but I think 2 drives before that, after Jack's pick, you know, we're in field goal range already, and we just give it right back. That one hurt.
That hurt bad.
I mean, it was like the exact same play as the one to end the game.
Yep. Yeah. And it hurt because we had done enough to get ourselves you know, we have the best kicker in the nation. I'll say it. I mean, until he proves he's not. And we'll talk about the halftime kick as well in a second. I'll give a little breakdown of why Shudek's kicking that. But, you know, just get us in range. Our defense played good for the most part.
They played solid. I mean, they didn't give up any big plays, you know, and that's kind of how
yeah,
that's how we're built is, you know, don't give up big plays. So it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust every single play for the drives that they gave up. You know, you'd like to see them hunker down a little bit and, you know, force some more field goals. But, yes, you know, Northwestern was always in like a decent situation on third down. We didn't have a whole lot of third and longs. And when we did, they'd get it to like fourth and short or something. They, I think they were 2 for 2 on fourth down. So that if there's anything I can point to defensively, is we were not good at getting off the field. And I think
their two drives in the first half were 16 plays for 75 yards and 14 plays for 79 yards. And a lot, like majority of those plays were runs. And we were kind of getting pushed around.
I mean, not so much pushed around. You get 3 yards. You give up 3 yards. You won't say, okay, we got pushed around. This is like everyone's doing okay, but no one's, you know, doing great, you know.
Right.
Like no one's going to get like a cussed out on this play for being in the wrong gap or a huge missed tackle. It's just like, all right, well, we got to squeeze this gap off just a little bit more. We got to get there a little bit faster. And then it's a 1.5 yard game run instead of a 3.5 yard run. But
we just couldn't come up with that big stop.
No, we couldn't put them behind schedule either. It's like I said, they didn't have a whole lot of third and longs. And we had a hard time getting off of the field. But, you know, other than that, I think they gave up less than 300 total yards.
Held them to 21 points, which is, you know, if you can keep a team to 20 points, I know I think Parker's goal is like 17, but 20 still is pretty good.
I mean, the defense had a solid day. Not great.
And they allowed seven points.
Not bad. Yeah.
7 points.
Yeah, only 7 points in the second half. Yeah. I mean, this game's not on the defense if you have to point some blame.
And so I think, you know, I do think that other than Nixon, we don't have any star defensive players.
That is another thing. It's like we have been struggling to get pressure just for four down linemen rushing.
Yeah,
we were hoping Chauncey to have a bigger year than he's had so far. Nixon has proved to be a pretty good pass rusher on the inside there, though.
He's formidable. But we just don't have you don't have a Josie Jewell in the middle, or, you know, at least right now, no one has stepped up and made plays when it really counts. And the bend don't break. You do a lot more bending when you can't come up with that one play, you know, if bending is to 21 points is what it is, I'm okay with that. The offense just has to figure it out. Back to the offensive side. Those wondering if we should bench Petrus or what the problem is Brian the problem? It's never one thing. Like people one side everything way too much. It's a little bit of, hey, Brian's got to call the right plays, call some more runs, set Petrus up to be in a better position where the guys are going to be more open. When he does do that, or Petrus gets a play where the guys are open, he has to be the one to put the ball on the guys. The receivers, once it gets to them, have to catch it and make a play. Like it's a multi-piece puzzle. And so for those of you looking to fix this entire problem with one swift chop of a coach or one swift chop of a starting QB, that's not the answer.
Never is. I mean, you think about, you know, that's what always, you know, kind of makes me chuckle when people talk about like firing coaches. Like, okay, you know, the guy they're gonna promote is just gonna do the like kind of the exact same thing, right? They're in the same system.
And
yeah, what quarterback wise, like I think Padilla's a pocket passer too. I don't think he's going to bring anything different to the table than Petras is.
Right. And you know what, Kev? So. It's this is what brings us to maybe the interesting, kind of intangible, non-quantifiable variable in a team. And like Drake said last week, people are going to hate us a little bit for bringing this up continually, but you would be absolutely shocked at how many people are in my DMs or in the Washed Up Walk-Ons direct messages asking, hey, is this kind of what, you know, what Coach Doyle was good at, was making sure that we were good at, you know, being more cohesive and disciplined. And I'm like, well, you're not wrong.
More so his job than making you lift heavy weights, I would say.
There's a big question of, and I, you know, I would be interested in your thoughts, Kev. Did we underestimate the turmoil of the racial disparity stuff that went on this summer? And you can get into specifics or not. I don't think it really matters. Did we underestimate the effect that would have on this team? And the effect of firing, the effect of firing a 20-year strength coach. Yes, it's what the players wanted. Some of them, a lot of the former ones, at least. But did we underestimate the effect that that would have? Here's what I'll tell the fans without going into too much behind the scenes, because I'm never going to like rat. It's not really ratting somebody out, but obviously we still talk. I still talk to a few of the guys on the team. And it is hard to coach right now in the Iowa program. It is hard to coach the way that oftentimes you need to coach. And I'm not saying that, obviously I'm not getting at in any way we need to go back to anything that made those players feel uncomfortable. But at some point, there has to be a standard. There has to be discipline in a program, and players have to answer for their actions. And from what I'm hearing, since that summer has happened and things loosen up a little bit, there hasn't been a whole lot of answering for, you know, maybe not being as accountable as you could be. And that is maybe highlighted more than anything by what happened this morning, as our star receiver. And to be quite frank, from what I'm hearing, one of the biggest problems since Doyle has left, Amir Smith-Marset, gets clocked doing twice the speed limit in a 30-mile-per-hour zone while drunk at 1:30 in the morning in Iowa City. And this isn't a direct one-to-one correlation, because when we were having good seasons, Tristan got popped for a similar. I think Snyder got popped.
Not nearly as bad.
You know, not nearly as bad.
I think was like 0.04, you know, just because he was under 21, he gets the –
right.
I guess the cuffs, but
this is an undisciplined act of citizenship by what's supposed to be one of the senior leaders. And
that's putting it lightly. He could have killed somebody.
Yeah, it you know what? And I'll say this on the podcast, and you know, I don't have to answer to anyone. When I first saw it, the first thing I thought was good. He got not good that he did it, good that he had something to bring his ass down to earth, something that he had to answer for. He got disciplined for maybe the first time, because from what I hear, Kev, he's kind of been doing what he wants. And the younger guys, they're looking at him and they're kind of following in that same direction. And this is maybe the first time that he's been disciplined in a while. And and he definitely hasn't had the first two games that he wanted to have. Maybe he was listening to a little bit of the noise this off season. All American returning, best returner, you know, supposed to be a part of the best receiving group in Iowa history. The first thing I thought was, fuck, maybe this will wake him up. Maybe this will wake them up. Like, hey, we gotta figure it out, because I don't know.
I understand what you're saying. No, I'm not gonna say
obviously it's a good horrible.
Thing. The guy got DUI, or you know, again, thank God he didn't kill anybody, including himself. Yeah.
I hate when people call it a mistake on Instagram, on Twitter. Come on, 75 and a 30 is no mistake. That you're out doing dumb shit. You're like, you're trying.
You know, yeah. You know, another thing that bothers me about it, you know, not nearly as important as the other stuff, but you're 0-2 and you just lost to Northwestern. What the fuck are you doing out partying?
You guys
go out and have fun and do their thing. I really never liked that after losses. I'm like, you know,
no
shit should bother you. You know, losing should bother you. You shouldn't want to go out after losing. You can talk about doing it during a pandemic too, but you know, like you said, a senior leader going out and partying after your 0-2.
It makes no sense, Kev. I know I don't have to ask you if you remember when James Morris basically stood up in the locker room our freshman year and said that he would personally fucking murder someone if he caught them downtown after we lost to I don't remember who.
2013. It was a home game, maybe Wisconsin.
I believe it was Wisconsin. And James Morris looked at everyone and it got real quiet. And you know what? That's what a senior leader does. And this is not a white versus black thing, because I know a lot of you listening can probably – you're probably going to make it that. But James Morris was a respected senior leader who did the right things. And when they lost, he stood up in the locker room and said, if I catch any of you downtown, you're going to have to answer to me, let alone the coaches. You're going to answer to me.
And you know, you bring up a great point there, Clove. You know, you can talk about, you know, coaches being scared to discipline anybody based off of what happened over the summer. It's got to come from the players. It always has. It always will have to. It starts with the seniors. You know, there's the analogy that, you know, the players are the engine, the coaches just of the bus, you know, the coaches just turn the steering wheel.
Yep.
It's, you know, stuff like that has to come from the players, especially the senior leaders. You know, I know you showed me the text from the guys about, you know, some of the stuff that's happening inside the locker room. Like, get together with the guys that don't like what's happening and fucking say something.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care if you're going to look unpopular. This is your senior season. This is might be the last season you ever play football ever. And don't let, you know, a bunch of guys just going around doing their own thing, or don't care what's going on with the season. Don't care that you're 0-2. Determine what's going to happen for your senior season. You know, I have a lot of regrets about my senior year. You know, we went 7-5, you know, 8-5, you count the bowl game. There's a lot of things that I could have done better. As a senior leader. But one thing I will say is that I was not afraid to be vocal. You know, I was not afraid to look like a bad guy. And that's something I hope that, you know, being 0-2, having a star senior wideout get up in trouble is a wake up call in the senior class. Like, hey guys, you know, season's already off to a shitty start. We might already be out of the conversation for Indianapolis. How do we want the rest of this year to go? If we want to start playing winning Iowa Hawkeye football, we have to start holding each other accountable. We have to continue to do the little things right. We have to knock this nonsense off and worry about the right things.
How close, because I have a feeling that I know the answer from you, because our class was good at this. How close, you know, if this was us, and one of our seniors, starter on the team, did this. We were 0-2. Obviously, it's hard to compare because this is an unprecedented season. We wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be 0-2 and they'd both be Big Ten games. But, you know, say we started 1-4 and now we were in this situation. And one of our guys goes out and has this happen. I would venture to bet maybe 90% sure that we would be at DEFCON 10 or 1. I don't know which is worse in that scenario. We would probably be at player only meeting level, senior led meeting where the seniors, like you said, like we had a couple guys, Josie, you know, me in a sense of like controlling the specialist group, you know, each guy kind of in their own position group, Sean Welsh, you know, we had guys that would step up and like, we wouldn't give a shit. And I think that this team is kind of close to that spot. Michigan State, who's on the schedule on Saturday, they just beat Michigan. This isn't going to be, you know, if we think like, it's 1-2, done deal. They got another thing coming. And so you're potentially looking at 0-3 and things are going downhill fast. It's an interesting situation that's happening, kind of unfolding right now. And
yeah, you know, and I don't want to alarm any of the listeners out there. We're 0-2 in two very close games, and we had one guy do something very, very, very fucking stupid. You know, is this the sky is not falling yet, but it is going to take something from the leadership of that team to get things going on the right path, because this team is, quite frankly, underperforming. It's one of the more talented teams in recent Hawkeye history. They have to, you know, change something up, you know, get, you know, if it's accountability, if it's practicing better, if it's doing better film study, getting with guys outside of practice time to, you know, talk about film, talk about the game, just do something as a team to get better outside. Because you guys have so much talent and it hurts to see you guys underperform. So, yeah, I mean, I think this team still has potential, you know, but it's going to be a real pivotal point in the season this week. You know,
yeah.
You could see, you know, okay, our star receiver's out, suspended. It could be easy. We're out of the conversation for Big Ten championship. It could be easy, you know, just pack it in, call it a year. This year doesn't matter anyway. Yep. Or, you know, you could see the opposite happen. Guys, you know, take the shock, smack in the face, and respond. So, I hope it's the latter of the two. But
yep,
you know, I also hope to see. Yeah, whatever. I'm done.
Yeah, that's about as much as can be said. We'll kind of stay. This is going to be a topic, obviously, if it continues, and we'll have a lot more to say on it as time goes on, and we'll talk about it when you know things get there. But real quickly before we end this thing, why wasn't our All-American best kicker in the country kicking right before halftime? We were at a 52-yard mark, 35-yard line, 34-yard line, I believe, because we go 18. Added on. So, you know, we're kicking a 52-yard field goal. The way kicking works is in the beginning of in warmups, the first thing you do is you find your line. It's what we call find your line. And it basically means, hey, I know that from this distance going this direction with this wind, I'm confident from here. I can hit my best ball from here and not have to adjust, because once you adjust, that's when your accuracy starts to go down. Keith and Shudak, both great kickers, they have slightly different lines. Caleb has a bigger leg. His line is probably 3 to 5 yards further than Keith's. The wind, though you couldn't really tell, and it actually looked like it was at their back a little bit. If you're looking at the flags, that wind swirls and comes right down the alley in your face from that direction. And I talked to Keith about it, and it gets real funky. And so we're right outside of Keith's range there. I guess really what you just have to trust and take it from me, someone who knows, take it from the coaches who have a plan. That's predetermined at what yard line Keith is going out or Caleb's going out. We want Caleb kicking that ball. And I think the kick that he put out there showed why we want him kicking that ball. 52 yards into the wind, and he hit it 25, 30% up the upright. Shit, that was – I mean, I was so proud. He smoked that thing. And the wind
I thought he had played the wind perfectly. I thought I was going to curve him in.
Yeah. And it died just a little early and left it straight and didn't push it back towards the middle. So that's the reasoning on that. That's really it. Again, apologize for the probably poor audio quality. I'll be back in Iowa tomorrow and then next week. The podcast from here on out will all be back to normal. There's some questions to be answered still. A lot of things going on. Definitely leaves us with a lot to talk about. That's it. Wash Up Walk-Ons 159. Hawks are 0-2. Michigan State's on deck. We will see what they've got. We'll do it. I mean, we're going to talk about it. Preview show on Thursday. Until then.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.